is Healthcare Now Radio's Interviews Now. Thank you for joining us. I'm Charisse Maynard, today's host. Follow our show using the hashtag Interviews Now and join the conversation. In this fast-paced, ever-changing landscape we call healthcare delivery, who can we trust to tell us, good or bad, what is happening now? Let us help you sort out these issues with today's thought leaders in the know. On this episode, we will be discussing payer denials and appeals with our guest, Brian McGraw, co-founder, president, and CEO from Intersect Healthcare. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Reese. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I have to tell you, Brian, my business before I moved to where I'm located now was actually located on Orchard Tree Lane in Towson. And I was, can you imagine? I was right up the road from you, and I actually have a background in payer denials, and I knew all about you. So I was kind of excited when I saw I was going to get to chat with you today. How funny is that?
I'm thrilled. So Orchard Tree Lane is literally a football throw away.
Exactly.
And yeah, really.
My office was there, but I lived in Mount Washington.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So well, I'm very familiar with the area. I was like, Brian McGraw, is that the same Brian McGraw? And it was the same person. I was like, oh my gosh, we were in the same business at one point in time.
Well, maybe I feel like I've been in this business forever. So hopefully you haven't been in it forever, but you sound too young to have been in it forever.
Yeah, not forever, but long enough to really understand it. So I was excited for this topic. So
good.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you found yourself in the healthcare space?
I can. The years and years ago, I was started out as a detail man for orthopedics and neurosurgery and worked with doctors and physicians in many different hospitals and health systems. Eventually, I made my way into healthcare data analytics and was working with one of the companies that had founded and started to use cost report information to analyze hospital performance. I was actually intrigued with it and the whole informatics space. I was hired by a company that sold what back then were called contract management systems, which were really payment adjudication systems between the managed care payer and the hospital. And during that period, we had developed a quality utilization and case management software. And since they knew I had some clinical background and knew my way around a chart and knew about outcomes management, they asked me to help develop that. So I was really interested in pursuing that. I first saw the term avoidable days and denied days back in the late 90s. I go, what is that? And what's the use of a managed care contract if all the payer has to do is deny it anyway? So as I was growing my family, realized I wanted to not travel so much, I talked with a couple of CFO friends of mine about the idea to build a denial management software. This is just when the government had come out with a mandate that everybody had to use electronic reason codes or claim adjustment reason codes to identify why they were adjusting the hospital's claim. And so they were interested and intrigued by the fact that we could capture that information and report back which payers were doing what and how much was it costing. So it all started there. And from that point, grew and developed a company that also assisted the hospitals in appealing their denials. And we started to use that as kind of a living laboratory to develop what does a hospital or a health system need to better pursue the payer disputes, the payer claim disputes. And so we've been fortunate, been on a trajectory. I think when the RACs came in, those were just another, quote, type of denial as far as we were concerned. And and we grew from there. So we were really the first RAC software in the marketplace, like in 2007. And, our trajectory took off from there.
Wow. That's how long ago did the company start?
We started in 2003, and so okay. I could say that I've been dealing with denials nonstop for a good 15 years. I mean nonstop.
Like, I always say, hey, I've been in denial for a long time.
Right, that's right. Right. Anybody who thinks they're managing denials well is in denial.
Exactly. Okay, so I read a recent statistic that said Medicare Advantage plans overturned 75% of denials hospitals appeal. So if the upside of appealing a denial is so huge, why don't more hospitals appeal payer denials?
Well, I think Sharice, you and I could have a cup of coffee over that, and we really
Right.
could. And so I have seen many of the systems that we deal with certainly do believe in pursuing denials. I was a little bit surprised to see that statistic, and I thought to myself, gosh, maybe that's related to physician claims. Most of the hospitals that we work with and deal with, one of the reasons they buy our system is they know that we provide that dogged pursuit of the claim dispute. And so the clients that I deal with are definitely interested in pursuing, but only to a certain level. And so I believe that there's a level of frustration today with payer denials and especially Medicare Advantage denials. One of the problems with Medicare Advantage denials is that the government has really given those Medicare Part C contractors, all the cards that their internal grievance process is it. That's all the provider has. And so it can be pretty frustrating when you know you're right and the payer still has the opportunity to say no, even though you know they're wrong and there's nothing you can do about it. So you have to put your resources where they're going to work best for you. Is that in the front end? Is that in the middle? Or is that in the back end? And I think with the cards stacked against providers in many states and in many jurisdictions, I think it's defeating. I was with a large health system out west about 2 weeks ago, and 25 appeal nurses in the room, a couple of physician advisors, and you could read it in their faces how upset and how defeating it was to know you're right, know that patient belonged in the hospital, and the insurance company simply said no because it didn't meet InterQual or MCG guidelines. And I'm like, well, your job is to continue to pursue. So why don't we see more hospitals pursuing? The ones I work with, I'm glad to say, pursue pretty far. Those that aren't pursuing, please do because you have entitled rights. They're enforceable, and we suggest you don't let the payers get away with it.
Right. I think in my experience too, Brian, it was on the provider side a little bit of a lack of knowledge of their rights. So can you kind of describe the members' rights of appeal and how hospitals should be using this right to their advantage?
Well, I've been preaching this gospel for a couple of years now,
I'm
and I
sure.
think that as you go across the country talking with your clients, they almost had never heard of using the members' rights of appeal. If you look at certain administrative codes, whether it's in your state or somebody else's state, if you look at the rules that manage Medicaid and manage Medicare programs are under within the Code of Federal Regulations, what you'll recognize is the member, the patient, have the greatest rights of appeal. And that in some way to perfect the use of that member's rights really means changing your agreement at the beginning. So it's so very difficult that once the patient walks out of the door to get them to sign anything. And so perfecting the members and let's call it pursuing those members' rights of appeal, that it takes work. So you have, there are forms committees, there are legal ramifications, but it's really important at that entry point, if you're going to have the patient assign their benefits to you, add another paragraph that talks about that the hospital has the right to appeal on your behalf should the payer deny for any reason. Getting that member's rights of appeal will take you many, many more steps than what the provider's rights of appeal are, even under the contract. Again, managed care departments don't like to upset the payers very much, but this is going to get the payer's attention. And so using that member's rights so that the hospital can get paid is a strategy that more hospitals should investigate and adopt.
So I see another trend. And, I'm sure you, as well as I, have heard rumors that commercial payers are increasing their denials. Any truth in
I would say so.
that?
It rarely goes the other direction. It's almost like real estate, right? It rarely goes down in value, usually goes up. Well, I have to tell you that the volumes have increased dramatically. And I think that is we certainly see growth in our outsourcing, that when we support hospitals with expert appeal writers and expert appeals, we've seen that particular growth across our client base. And I think many hospitals are beginning to really get nervous that they don't have the bandwidth to handle the increase in denials. And it's not just the denials. When you think about what the RACs were doing years ago, and that when they first came out, the velocity and the volume of records that were requested and denials that were coming out, this was across every hospital in America. Well, once the RACs were tamped down in 2013, 2014, all of those bounty hunters had to go somewhere, and they started to knock on the commercial payer doors. And so we've just seen an increasing amount of post-payment reviews, post-payment audits, unfortunately, that aren't protected by the contract. So there, in many contracts, there are no audit limits. And so you hear names like Cotiviti and Equiclaim and Omniclaim and What a Claim, whatever you want to call it. It's like, pay my claim. That they're really coming back to the hospitals requesting records and trying to find reasons to recoup dollars. And hospitals weren't prepared for this. We do recognize that now they have some experience at this. They should measure those, the audits, measure the administrative burden it takes to reply to these audits, and ensure that in their next contracting phase, there's some fair and reasonable limit to the audits.
Right, and there are some limits in place now, but they're kind of not well known or not exploited maybe how they should be. So can you elaborate on this issue? What are your customers telling you with regard to the types of reviewers employed by payers?
Well, I wish I had my physician advisor here on the phone at the same time. We've really run into the fact that the reviewers of these medical records aren't qualified reviewers. They're not certified coders. They may not be physicians, and yet they feel that they are because they didn't find certain information in a 30-minute review of the medical record that can throw back to the hospital and remove a patient's diagnosis. We think that's almost criminal.
Yeah, it's definitely
We
dangerous.
believe, well, it is dangerous. Here you're removing a diagnosis that the physician had put on the patient's record without the patient's knowledge, without the physician's knowledge, and you're saying simply because we didn't find enough information to support that diagnosis doesn't mean the diagnosis is invalid. So when you have somebody who's not skilled with understanding laboratory values and medical record results, radiology results, reviewing a chart, pulling a diagnosis simply because they can't find the information that they understand, we think that's dangerous, and that it could possibly be construed as practicing medicine without a license. I can assure you, the patients do not know that that diagnosis has been removed, and you're really changing the patient's medical history. It's not
Exactly.
a thing that should be taken lightly, and I believe hospitals should be fighting tooth and nail to ensure that the judgment of the treating physician is upheld.
Now that brings up an interesting question before we move on. What would trigger a patient to understand that something may have been changed in their record? Do you think they would ever
Well,
notice?
I do not, unless the hospital brought it to their attention. I do not. I think if this happens within a clinic setting or a physician practice setting, that would get the attention of the doctor. But again, the doctors in the hospitals might be removed from that administrative process. And additionally, for some reason, and I don't know why this is, these are still construed as, quote, billing denials or claim denials.
Right.
And they don't really garner the protections that medical necessity does in most of the state administrative codes. If it were a medical necessity issue, the patients have many, many rights. Now, what hospitals may not be aware of is that even if it's just a billing denial, the member also has many, many rights that the hospital does not. I do think that if more members knew that the hospital was the insurance company, in its infinite wisdom, was changing their diagnosis and their medical history, you'd hear about it. So I don't understand why it's kind of kept quiet, but once again, that has an awful lot to do with the fact that the hospital is not pursuing the members' rights of appeal. And if that were the case, I can assure you, once you appeal on behalf of the member certainly is copied on all the correspondence where you're objecting to that, the removal of that diagnosis or the denial of that medically necessary procedure. The members are always copied and informed.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Interviews Now on Healthcare Now Radio. And I'm talking to Brian McGraw, and we're talking about payer denials and appeals. And this is quite an exciting conversation for me, Brian. Let's get into number five here. Early in our interview, you mentioned centralized denial management as a new strategy to combat denials and win appeals. Can you describe how your software supports the centralized denial management appeals team?
Well, it's interesting because you have to recognize that a claim denial or a medical necessity denial, you know, goes across many different departments in the hospital, all the way from the registration authorization process to medical management to the CDI or clinical documentation improvement area to the billing office. So there's an awful lot of actors, quote, in the play. And it's really important to ensure that the handoffs and the information crosses these different departments in a well-stratified and well-organized way. So when I talk about centralization of the process, there needs to be a central repository for all of the documents that come in, a repository of information. A vast majority of clinical denials occur with snail mail. All of the post-payment review audits occur with snail mail. There's nothing electronic about it. Now, there are electronic denial processes where the payer just sends back in a remittance advice or an explanation of benefits that carves out or decides to pay at the lower rate, even though they were billed for a higher reimbursed DRG. So there's some of that information, but putting all that information in the same place, putting all of the actors in the same workflow makes great sense. These are complex AR recoveries we're talking about. They're high dollar. They require a clinical professional most of the time, whether it's a nurse, a physician advisor, or a highly skilled coder. And then also somebody who's really skilled in doing the appeal and really understanding the hospital's rights and really what needs to be portrayed as evidence-based medicine and a standard of medical care in the community. So these are not appeals that an unskilled or untrained person would want to take on. So putting all that information together, putting the content together, putting the payer's business rules together, centralizing all of that, quote, information that's related to addressing a claim dispute, makes great sense. Most patient accounting systems don't have it. They have, I think they're great accounting systems, but the specialized complex recovery process with clinical denials, coding denials, and DRG downgrades and reassignments really should be in a specialized expert system. So we centralize all of that. Veracity has been or the product that we put out there. But we also believe that hospitals, and we go out and train, you can do this yourselves. You don't necessarily need our product to do it. And so we freely share and transfer knowledge to organizations that may want to build their own library of clinical content that helps support the arguments that are put forth to the payers.
So I guess it would be incorrect to say that intersex software kind of helps these workflows become more efficient.
Well, I would say so. We say it all the time, the more streamlined, the better. And we're big believers, and again, preach this gospel of if you really want to have the best outcome, you have to know the path to the end of the road. You have to ensure that your contracts allow that path to the end of the road. And you have to be willing to escalate things to the point where if you agree to disagree, it goes to that dispute resolution clause, that arbitration mediation clause in the agreement. You have to, I think that hospitals, and whether it's a managed care director or a CFO or a CEO, they really need to support the folks who are fighting to get that hospital paid for the good services they delivered. And we think that's, incredibly important. So the idea is to make sure that you have a pathway to get to an impartial decision, get it outside of the court of the payer's opinion, and that the hospital or the treating physician's opinion ends up ruling. I think we saw this exercise in the RAC program. Most of the wins for hospitals, other than when they were taking a settlement, occurred at that impartial decision maker level, the ALJ level. And the MAC and the QIC, they more often upheld. But when you get to some party that says, I'm gonna look at this independently and not be favorable to the provider or favorable to the payer, I believe that an average of 70 to 90%, when you get outside of the court of the payer's opinion, is very achievable.
And it's strange that you mentioned the payer, because they usually make out quite well. You mentioned that payers are winning the denials and appeals game by using their data more effectively than providers. What types of data analysis or reports does your system provide? And can you give us a common example or a case scenario?
Well, I think maybe I've got to be careful about case scenarios because I don't want to mention any specific accounts necessarily. But let's talk about the use of data and the use of data to deny. I mentioned this in a presentation to a client yesterday that one of the reasons that we're getting adjustments on the claims that we submit is because the payers are very well. They're proficient at using their information. They're proficient at exercising their contractual rights for something that we haven't administratively done within that claim build process. And so one of the reasons we get these adjustments on claims is because the payers really manage their contracts well and the rules under those contracts, whether they're billing rules, whether they're clinical policy rules, whether they are administrative rules for authorization and admission, they're really good at dinging us when we don't do what we're supposed to do. So they identify the gaps and the lapses better than we do. What we can do as advocates, and what I think good technology can do, is identify those pain points, identify the root cause, and identify the claim payment issues that come up. We normally see them in the remittance side in what we call reason codes and remark codes, but we have to be able to take that further up the food chain. We have to get that at the beginning. And so we want to be able to identify what's the root cause of payer A denying procedure B and making sure that we capture that information well and that we're alerted to it and that we implement some type of remediation process to ensure that we're not hamsters on a wheel, that we don't keep making those same mistakes at the front end, at the middle, or at the back end. So, it's unfair to point back to a physician or point back to a lack of documentation all the time when we have the ability to capture that information and help remediate the process. So I do think that they are proficient at using their data. Remember, they're claims administrators. They are not caregivers. They are not, we see as our main purpose to provide care to the community, but making sure we follow the pathway of the rules that we've agreed to will give us better financial outcomes for sure.
And it definitely creates a better, offense for the if you have a team in place that knows exactly what they're doing. Thank you, Brian, for joining me today. This has been Brian McGraw. To learn more about Intersect Healthcare, find them at intersecthealthcare.com or follow them on Twitter. You can also find Brian on LinkedIn. So, Brian, thank you so much. I'm so glad I ran into you here and that we got a chance to talk about this particular subject.
Thank you, Charisse, very much. And way to make the connection, Orchard Tree Lane. I can almost look at it right now.
Exactly, right, like you can live across the street, right?
That's right. That's right. All right, thank you so much.
And thank you for tuning in today. For more information about Interviews Now, visit our show's program page on healthcarenowradio.com. And until next time, if it's happening in healthcare and it's now, it's on Interviews Now.